with the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man.
Welcome to the Leisure Man Podcast on NBC Sports. I'm Paul Papps. He's Andrew Perloff. After week one of the football season, Perloff, of course, the first topic we're going to hit, watches. What well, do you have for me?
So, Odell Beckham Jr. obviously wore a $200,000 watch week one. Says he's going to still wear it. The NFL hasn't banned it yet. Okay, so I have a couple of nice watches. I have two, I think.
When you say nice, is that by brand, by cost? What do you mean?
Cost.
Or the looks?
I have one Shinola that Dan Patrick gave us.
That's right.
That's really nice. And I have another one that I picked up. I don't even remember the brand, but it's looks, and I think it costs more. So nice, pretty much by cost. I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I think so. Also, the feel of it. Like, if it has a heavier, more solid feel, it may not cost that much, but it looks like a grown man's watch.
My problem is, if I don't wear a watch regularly and get used to the feel of it, I am a little bit uncomfortable wearing a watch. I can get the time off my phone. So if I get out of the watch mode and put it in the drawer, then I'm not getting back in. I'm like, you know what? I'm just more comfortable without it. Where do you stand?
I have a couple policies on watches. Now, I never use mine for the time. I rarely do because I have a watch that's broken. It's a nice watch.
Mm.
It doesn't work anymore, and I just wear it socially.
Get out of here. That's like wearing non-prescription glasses.
Which people do.
Yeah, I know. I think this is a little more radical than you're giving it credit for. Well, you're wearing a non-working watch because it looks cool?
Yeah, because it's still a good watch. I'm not going to throw it away, and I don't really know how to fix it or where to get it fixed. So I just pop it on. It's like a Nixon kind of nice watch.
So what if, for example, like your cell phone runs out of juice, you don't have the time, and someone desperately needs the time, and you pull it out, you're like, well, it's 3 in the morning. Like
it's 3:17 somewhere.
Yeah.
It's not on me. You got to find a watch, dude, not me. The dude is in trouble.
But you're wearing a watch. That's in the history of mankind. Asking a guy with a watch what time it is, you expect a reasonable answer.
I think I'm looking forward now that you say it, to the day when someone asks me what time it is, I go, I have no idea. And I'm sitting there with a big watch on my wrist.
Yeah, that's on brand.
Okay,
for you,
here's
Paul.
A couple of tips. I like watches in the summer more than winter because you can see them on your wrist because you're wearing shorter sleeves.
That makes sense.
And longer sleeves, they get all bunched up. I think every guy should get a dress watch. For when you go out, you wear a suit, you go out to a dinner. It doesn't have to be expensive as much as it has to look like a grown-up's watch. Not like a Swatch and not like something you would wear to the beach with like a rope belt.
Although Swatches are probably back in. Who knows?
Yeah.
Odell Beckham Jr.'s watch looked like a Swatch.
But you can go get a simple Timex for $60 to $70 or $80, which I don't think is a ton for a nice watch. And they have a good feel to them and good. They last forever. And you're not out to impress anybody unless you are.
Yeah, it feels like kind of like, okay, I'm going to say it feels like kind of like an old man fashion accessory.
I think so.
Like if you're a hipster, you have nothing to do with that.
Well, I know, but I guess I'm in a position where I'm not looking to impress anybody with my watch, but I do like the looks of my watches and I do wear them.
So it's like wearing a nice suit or something or a nice sport jacket or a nice, I don't know, some sweater.
Like if my wife and I went to like a night out, I'm going to put on whatever pants, shirt, and I'm going to put on a watch that matches.
Dear God, are you serious,
man? I'm serious.
Who are you impressing? Your wife? You're already married to her for a long time.
Kind of, a little bit. My wife likes it when I'm put together when we leave.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you're saying that. I'm
proud of this.
I mail it in so much with my wife. If we're going out, which is rare because we're like, all we do is complain about how much the babysitter costs. I would never dress to impress my wife.
I got to tell
you. It's terrible.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if you're right or I'm right, but I like when we get dressed and I come out of the bathroom, I walk out, my wife gives me that, ooh, that looks sharp. That's all I need from my wife. I like that little compliment because my wife looks fantastic and she's got accessories. She doesn't buy tons of jewelry, but when she walks downstairs, I'm like, oh yeah.
But you guys are already married. What the heck? What is all this? I don't even know what you're talking. This is a foreign language. Impressing your wife, being impressed by, what?
The only girl that I care about how I look is my wife.
Oh, Paul, save it.
I'm not even panicking.
Is this our anniversary podcast? Is Dana listening to this? Get out of here.
Man.
I'm not saying that you should dress to impress other women. I'm just saying like, you've already impressed her. You won that battle. The war is over. It's like going back and rubbing it in the opponent's face. You won that battle. Stop dressing up for dates with your wife.
See, my wife's going to be really mad at you if I do so. I mean, she's going to go back.
I felt like knowing your wife, I feel like she would side with me. She'd be like, oh, yeah, I just sort of, I bet she'd be like, yeah, I just make Paulie feel good by saying he looks good on
probably.
Those nights.
Like, she doesn't tell me what to wear ever or like lay out my outfit. She would never do stuff like that. But when, you know, you come out ready to go out for a night out, whatever you're doing, I don't know. I like the feel when she goes, oh, that looks cool.
Oh, my gosh. You're crazy.
All right.
One thing about my wife is, and I don't know if your wife is like this, terrible taking compliments. If I say, oh, you look great tonight. Oh, I didn't look great last
night.
Is that ever happen to you? Like, you have to be careful with compliments that they don't always work the way you want them to.
You have to word a compliment like you're a lawyer putting together a brief for a judge. There cannot be any wiggle room in your language. Like, oh, that dress looks pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. Oh,
pretty
my
good.
Gosh.
You might have say it looks like shit.
You better be, Paul, you better be dressed really nice with a fancy watch if you're going to say that dress looks pretty good.
I mean, there should be, you know how those telemarketers have what to say on those flip charts when I don't want to buy this product. Here's why you should. And you go, there should be a chart for guys on what to say to their girlfriends and wives.
Yeah.
Like, if your wife goes, what do you think of my haircut? There's two words that you say, guys. Looks awesome. Stop talking. Yeah. Stop talking. It's not too bright. Awesome. Looks great.
What's really going through your head is I don't even notice the haircut that you just paid $200 for.
Right. But if you're asked about how something looks, like when Belichick says, we're on to Miami, keep saying it over and over.
Yeah.
Some variation of you look awesome.
So you're saying that they're sort of like, they're testing you when they, like you saying the original compliment, they're not just going to let it go there. They're going to cross-examine your compliment.
All right. So let me try you out. I just went shopping. I'm walking downstairs. I'm your wife. I got a new dress on. I come out. What do you think of this?
Oh, honey, it's great. It makes you look thin.
Wait, so the other outfits don't make me look thin. Great. So I needed to buy a dress to make me look thin. This dress, so I had to only buy from the store? Oh. That's what you're going. That's the road you went down by the thin line.
I know. I was joking.
I know.
That
was the
worst.
Up.
That was an example of that's the worst line you could say.
All right, let's get to some sports here. That's good. Hey, you bros out there, this will all help. All right, it's fall. It's time to go explore the foliage, drive around the Northeast or wherever you are, right, McLovin?
Oh, man, Paul, you are in your zone.
Prepare for road trips. Before your travels begin, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you go. Ensure a safe journey. I actually went to O'Reilly Auto Parts online the other day and bought windshield wipers for my car for the season because it's going to be snowing before you know it. Windshield wipers are such an easy thing, and people ignore them. Go to O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. I want to start with Antonio Brown and the commissioner's list. I'm really have mixed feelings on the commissioner's list. The commissioner's list is basically a power of the commissioner to take away a player who is bad for the league. It's a very vague terms of why and what you could do to be put on the commissioner's list. If you remember, Adrian Peterson, the running back, was in trouble. Pictures came out that he spanked his child so hard he left marks and had a child to be taken to the doctor. And he went on the commissioner's list for basically the rest of the season. I think he missed 11 games, maybe 15 games. Anyway, I have mixed feelings. I don't like the commissioner having ultimate power on something like this where you can't appeal. And if you're completely not guilty, you miss all the games. But for the good of a league, sometimes it's good that the commissioner does not have red tape to go through to do something that's great for his league. Where do you...
I think it's in the CBA that he has this power. So it's already been bargained for. I think there's no downside to put him on the exemption, the commissioner's exempt list, because there's two things that can happen. Either they can go too far in punishing somebody who does not have strong allegations against him, or the opposite is that they don't go far enough like they did with Ray Rice. That is the nightmare scenario for the NFL. After Ray Rice, they can't afford to be lenient on domestic violence. So I would err on the side of caution because there's no downside. I mean, who's going to rip them?
But you can make the case. Yeah, you're right. No one will rip you for over-punishing a player.
Right.
No one's ripping the NFL and the 49ers with Reuben Foster. He was falsely accused of a crime.
Right. Nobody criticized
him. He was taken off the field. Some people felt a little bad for Reuben Foster in the moment, but nobody went scorched earth on the NFL.
Right. Was that a different situation because he wasn't as good a player? He wasn't an established player yet?
He was not a superstar.
Yeah, exactly. He was a linebacker. He wasn't a skill position player. He wasn't a perennial Pro Bowler. So maybe it'd be a little different if it was a Pro Bowler. A quarterback would have been interesting because quarterbacks, you really, You know, you could take Antonio. It's another kind of facet of this. You take Antonio Brown off the Patriots. No one's worried that the Patriots aren't going to be a good team. If you took, what if it was a quarterback who had a civil suit against him?
Yeah, it's true. But if you think about it, before the commissioner's list, Ben Roethlisberger was suspended for 6 games without being convicted of any crime. And he was not even charged with a crime. He was just accused of a couple things that summer. And they sat him down for 6 games. Ben Roethlisberger, yeah. 2-time Super Bowl champion quarterback. That story is in our rearview mirror now, but at the time, that was a big deal for, and it, I think it was appealed down to 4 games, but even that.
Yeah, that was huge. That was kind of right before social media took over.
We're taping this podcast at 2 p.m. on Wednesday. As of right now, Antonio Brown is on the field practicing with the Patriots. So it appears that the Patriots intend to continue on and play him in the game on Sunday. Do you think he will play in the game on Sunday? If you had to bet, just a bet.
If I had to bet now, I guess yes, although I always fear more information is going to come out. Like, there was a report that Drew Rosenhaus gave an interview and said he knew a lawsuit was coming.
I would like to ask Drew Rosenhaus, and yeah. I hope the interview asked Drew Rosenhaus, did you give that information to the Patriots when you were trying to sign your client to them?
Yeah.
Did you inform the Patriots that you were expecting a lawsuit, a civil lawsuit, from a person when you signed? Did the Patriots know? I would love to know that.
Yeah, see, that's why, like, the funny thing about Antonio Brown, and not that any of the stories before this are comparable, but, like, he just seems to, like, generate headlines so quickly that I feel there's more information. I almost feel it's unfair. Like, we don't have the full information. Like, I don't know if the Patriots do and the NFL does, but there's got to be the person who is alleging this in the civil suit has to have a bunch of evidence. I've already seen some of it.
Right.
Like, I'd like to, that's why I'm, like, not bad with these employees, because they need time to sort through it and say what's here.
I actually think they're going to let Antonio Brown play this weekend.
Yeah,
it's not a primetime game, which I really believe factors in.
Yeah.
It's not a national TV primetime game.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't have to be the focal point of the whole weekend. And if they can interview this woman or her attorney early next week or before the weekend, they could always put him on
the... I guess she's getting married this weekend. They're going to interview her next week.
You kidding?
I believe so. I got to double check that headline. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's a wild story. I honestly, if the NFL always has to err on the side of caution now, after they don't have a choice. So
they're also erring on the side of not giving people due process and innocent until proven guilty, which is understandable. Like you said, they don't get criticism for that very often.
No, they really don't. And the other thing too is, even if the commissioner exemplifies, you still get paid. It's not if it ends up being nothing like it did with Reuben Foster, Antonio Brown can pick up his career. So it's not like a legal, system, which is really bad. So anyway, quick question. This is a little thorny, but does Antonio Brown's erratic behavior over the last year, I mean, you can't not call it erratic. There's a lot of weird stuff going on. Like not showing up for practice with the Steelers, that's very erratic. That's nothing like he ever did.
Yeah.
He threw a TV out a window. Like he's just had a lot of things that he said over the last 2 years. Do you see like a pattern with Antonio Brown is this case so different that it's nothing else matters? But I honestly like worry about Antonio Brown. I just feel like it's just like even the Instagram post where he put on Mike Mayock's letter, it just seems like an overreaction. It feels like he's acting erratically.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like a slow progression towards what he was destined to be, his true personality.
Yeah.
Like he kind of kept things in check his first couple of years with the Steelers because he was not a star. And once he became a star, he could get away with things they couldn't get when he was catching 43 balls. When you're catching 130 footballs, you could behave differently. I was watching this Dennis Rodman documentary, and it's fascinating to see his first couple of years with the Pistons. His first year with the Pistons, they said he wouldn't speak. He wouldn't talk. He wouldn't do interviews. He was so quiet and shy, we couldn't get him out of his shell. And then 6 years later, he's on the streets in Manhattan in a wedding dress. 6 years.
Yeah.
7 years later. And it's almost like once you become a superstar, all the things that you want to do or all the behavior that you've been bottling up, you don't have to bottle it up anymore.
Well, there's an expression that once you get money, the true you comes out. Like you are, whatever your character defects are, the money makes them grow.
Also the power as an athlete. Like Dennis Rodman had some crazy behavior when he was at his peak of a player, but he was so damn good. He was uncuttable.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Well, I would say that at his peak, there's way better players.
He was good at what he did, but he wasn't well-rounded.
By choice. I actually think Dennis Rodman, I wouldn't say underrated. If you don't remember Dennis Rodman that well, he came into the league out of Southeast Oklahoma, nowhere state. first year or two, he didn't do a ton for the Pistons. Then he exploded as this rebounder, defensive stopper. Then he went to San Antonio, led the league in rebounds, like 18 a game, stopped shooting basically almost exclusively. And then he went to the Bulls with Michael Jordan for 3 years. He didn't shoot at all. I mean, he stick backs. All he do is set picks, play defense, hustle, frustrate
rebound,
people.
Yeah.
Rebound, of course.
Did he say, was that the year that he had like 18 rebounds a game or something?
And like 2.4 points per game.
But
I think he was one of the perfect players because all the other players on the team know they don't have to pass on the ball.
Yeah, he was a perfect fit. But I think that defense was a little overrated because my guy, Charles Barkley, would take him to school.
That's true.
I don't know why, but Barkley owned, but maybe it was just one of those things where he was confident against Rodman.
Although Charles had a physicality that even Dennis couldn't keep up with.
And I think Charles was a little quicker. Rodman was good against big guys then, but what happened was Jordan was so good, he would come back and win the game in the fourth quarter every time. We had an interesting pre-show debate. There was something in the 30 for 30 that Rodman was the most famous person in the NBA for 3 years when he was at his peak with the Bulls. And I kind of argue that Jordan was still more famous, but you guys, you kind of convinced me that maybe I'm wrong. I mean, it's different fame. Can you explain like where at the levels of fame you think the two of them were at in that peak when Jordan came back from baseball and they won all those titles?
Yeah, I think if you're going to compare the fame, international fame, worldwide fame of Rodman and Jordan, you're really splitting hairs because they were both known by everybody.
Yeah.
So there really is no higher or lower. I mean, unless you go door to door and get the number, you're not going to get it. They were world famous from whether you're 8 years old or 80 years old. That's how I decide how so famous. Rodman was more famous off the court. Jordan was famous on the court and marketing. You know, if you wear a pair of sneakers, you probably had Jordan on your feet at some point in the 80s or 90s. Rodman was this like, you're more, if you didn't like sports at all, you're still going to find out his name. Same with Michael Jordan, but Rodman was on like Us Weekly and stuff like that. He had a different audience.
He was
notorious.
Michael Jordan, you never has ever been an athlete where you knew the silhouette more. And then also, I know as a fact because I was over there, he's really popular in Asia. He was a precursor to Kobe. You know, Kobe's a giant in Asia and LeBron too. But Michael was very famous internationally.
And there
was basketball is popular over there.
There was a time though when Dennis was the one athlete in sports that everybody wanted to interview. News.
Yeah.
Howard Stern.
Way better interview than Michael. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He didn't do it.
Well, I mean, he was a more interesting interview. I always thought his interviews, you probably were around when he got interviewed. They were always a little mumbly and incoherent.
Yeah. Back in the old days on the Dan Patrick Show, we had Rodman on, I wouldn't say regularly, but I knew we had him like 6 or 7 times. It was pretty easy to get a hold of him, actually. We had his agent's number and he would just say, all right, call Dennis now.
Do you ever do it in person?
Never in person.
Yeah.
Never met him. But Dan actually hung out with him once at this place called the Crowbar in Chicago after a Bulls game. And he said, Dennis must have done 20 shots that night casually.
Wow.
Because everyone who came up to him, he said he had a table of shots at the bar. And he goes, there must have been 60 or 70 shots of whatever alcohol it was. And anytime someone would come up, and this is before cell phone pictures. Mm. People would come up and say, oh, Dennis, can I get your autograph? No, but you can have a shot with me. And he would do a shot with it. All right, bro, see you later. And that was their experience with Dennis Rodman. And Dan said, I spent one night with him and I needed about 3 days to recover. He went out the next night and had, 7 and 18. And and he goes, and Rodman probably did this 5 nights a week.
Okay. Another criticism of the show. This is directed at you, actually. This is your fault. Do all the 30 for 30 producers have a Chicago connection? Because I feel like, the 85 Bears, the 90s NBA, are the dominant 30 for 30 topics. I feel like...
Maybe that's just me talking about them.
Well, yeah, but remember, I know you were friends with one 30 for... You gave some advice. Which was the... was it the 85 Bears 30 for 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like whoever that guy is does them all, and he sort of sneaks Chicago into all the 30 for 30. Maybe I'm imagining that, but you talk about them more. But like, I do feel like the 90s NBA is covered like the 85 Bears. It's like, it's a magical time in all of our time. All the 30 for 30 producers are our age, and that was... it for them.
I think maybe it's because it's long enough now to be nostalgic about it.
Yeah.
Like Christian Laettner is now a legend, not a real person. We don't see Christian Laettner on our TV except for during the Final Four, during a shot. So he's 30 for 30 worthy. But like, what would be not 30 for 30 worthy?
Well, like 30 for 30, they did like the 2000 Orlando Magic. Like they did, there's been so many documentaries on those Bulls teams. They did, but they don't have like, there's no 90s baseballs documentaries.
Well, yeah. There could be one.
I guess the home run power.
You could do Maguire and Sosa. You could do the strike. But those are far enough away where if you're 20, you have no direct recollection of them. And it's worthy. Like you even said when you're watching the Rodman documentary, you know, I've seen all this before. Yes, because of our age, we lived through it.
Yeah.
But if you're 25, you're like, this guy's nuts. Can you imagine if you watched the Rodman documentary and you knew casually about him? That would be pretty entertaining.
I guess so. I feel like he was everywhere, though. He did not make his life a mystery. But, for example, like, when you talk about the 30 for 30 brand, it still has a little Bill Simmons imprint on it with an NBA. Mm-hmm. That, like, I don't see anyone doing like the 90s Favre Packers team. It feels like they're all NBA. I feel like that era of NBA, the Bad Boy Pistons, for example, was in there.
That was a good one.
There's so much Bird magic in there. I it's weird. I feel like those eras of NBA, maybe because we see the players up close, there's something that is still grabbing at our fascination with all
of them. I would look at it the same thing. The age of the generation, the age of the people who are producing these documentaries is 40 plus.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Connor Schell and John Dahl and the producers over at ESPN, who have overseen the 30 for 30 brand over the past two decades, they're telling the stories of their youth as a sports fan.
Right.
It might be as simple as that the handful of guys in charge, men and women in charge, I should say, that's their stories. Sign up to be an O Rewards member today and earn 1 point for every dollar spent. Receive your rewards twice as fast and on the go when you provide your email address. O Rewards members get $5 back for every $150 you spend. It's fast, it's easy, and free. Only at O'Reilly Auto Parts, C-Store, or orewards.com. That's orewards.com for more details. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. And you know what, one, I think my favorite 30 for 30s are the stories where I knew a little bit, but I didn't know enough, and I didn't know the details. Like, the strongest one of all time for me, or two strongest ones, are the two Escobars. But Andres,
was that the first one or the first noteworthy one?
I don't think it was the first, but
it was certainly the
first season.
Yeah, it was the first one that really garnered attention.
It's about Andres Escobar. He was a defenseman, captain of Colombia's international soccer team, and he scored an own goal in the World Cup, which took Colombia out of the advancing in the World Cup. I can't remember the year, maybe 92. I can't remember. And he came back home. He was one of the popular players on their team. He went out drinking with some friends a couple nights later after he got back, and he was assassinated. Not killed randomly, not robbed. Drug dealer, hitmen saw that he was out and took him out because he scored that own goal.
Yeah.
It wasn't coincidence. And and then there's the Hillsborough disaster with Liverpool, which I think a lot of people remember from, again, late 80s. There was a small soccer stadium called Hillsborough area, and they had this FA Cup match with Liverpool and, I don't know if it was Nottingham Forest, I can't remember what team they played. And it was too full. They didn't have crowd control. And I think 96 people passed away, mostly Liverpool fans. And more so on that thing is I didn't know the backstory of how the media blamed the fans. I didn't know that part of it. I just thought these soccer fans got out of control and crushed each other, like I think a lot of Americans. Mm. And then I read more about it as I got older, and I realized it. Then I learned even more in that Hillsborough documentary that it wasn't their fault. It was a fault of a lot of others. And they got blamed for it afterwards. Like, they falsified blood alcohol levels on people to make it seem like they're rowdy hooligans. Oh, it's dark.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the most famous one, though, actually, you don't think of it as a 30 for 30, is OJ.
Yeah.
Because it won the Oscar. Best documentary.
Was that four parts?
Yeah. Is that officially the 30 for 30? I think it is.
It's under the brand.
And it actually, I think it won the Oscar for best documentary. That almost felt like it was a little different than the ones we're talking about.
I got a college football question for you. Jalen Hurts was the quarterback of Alabama, stayed around. He got replaced by Tua Tagovailoa. Everyone thinks Tua is going to be a top three draft pick next year. Jalen Hurts was not considered a professional quarterback prospect at this time last year.
Right.
So much so that Alabama benched him.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely people who were talked about moving him to running back.
Yes. Or defensive back or any other position. He is now about 9 weeks away from winning the Heisman Trophy for Oklahoma. Now, I haven't heard anyone say he's a pro prospect yet.
Oh, well, you look harder. Yeah. He's a
What's the buzz? What is it?
Well, I know someone who knows his agent. He had a great summer. He worked out with Steve Clarkson or one of those guys,
right.
And it was like his arm is real. So he got in the quarterback discussion in the summer, and then he's pretty much perfect passing so far in two games. It doesn't mean anything. So think about Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray couldn't have been farther from the NFL discussion.
Jalen Hurts is probably an inch and a half taller, 2 inches taller, and about 20 pounds heavier.
Oh, yeah. I think he's even maybe even more taller than that. But Yeah, he's getting a lot of buzz. He's getting some buzz because nobody knows. The other guys are question marks. Tua is not big, and Herbert is erratic. And then Jordan Love is still an unknown. So there, and Frome is, a lot of people don't like Frome. So you know how quarterbacks are, Paul, that people are going to jump on them. My question is, I think the recent years have proved that system quarterbacks doesn't matter. People aren't discounting the systems they come from. Because you could have easily discounted Baker Mayfield and said, look, this dude is obviously a spread offense. And the other thing is, you've seen Big 12 defenses. They don't tackle at all, so all the quarterbacks look amazing. Like, why didn't Bryce Petty go number one overall? My guy from Baylor, he went to the fourth round. It turned out he wasn't good.
You can go back to guys like Alex Smith and Jared Goff a few years ago. They had that spread system, and no one's frowned upon it. It's almost like that's how the NFL is going. They're imitating college. One thing about Jalen Hurts I think is interesting is that if Baker Mayfield's a success, it appears, Russell Wilson is a big-time success. Kyler Murray is off to a pretty good start, slow start, and then a really good fourth quarter. If he has a good rookie year, the too-short-to-play quarterback argument will be kind of shelved for the next few years.
Yeah.
Not gone, but shelved. Like, you won't be able to make the case that he's too small to play quarterback because you'll have no leg to stand on.
I'm looking at what is Jalen Hurts' height? I'm looking it up now.
I bet 6 foot, six and a half inch, maybe.
Yeah, you're right, which is fine now. He's listed at 6'2".
Two is 6'1 or less.
Yeah, Hurts is listed at 6'2", so who knows?
So let's say 6'1", you're not going to bat an eye.
No, I mean, Lamar Jackson, I think, was 6'1".
We were point.
Close to him, yeah. No, I think Baker is the one who really blew the doors off that. Kyler Murray would never go number one if Baker didn't throw 27 touchdowns as a rookie. But then again, there's the old school guys like Bruce Arians who might have the number two pick next year. Old school NFL guys still want the tall guy. Sure. Don't you think there's going to be guy like that's why Trevor Lawrence they're all salivating over because he's tall.
It is interesting if Lamar Jackson, which I thought the Ravens reached a little bit, when they drafted him last year late in the first round, even though some people thought it was a bargain to get him there, I was like, boy, this guy's a thin running quarterback, and this league is not good on thin running quarterbacks.
No.
But I know it's one game, but if he continues even close to the success during the season, again, it's going to open the doors for other running quarterbacks.
Oh, absolutely.
Run first, guys.
Absolutely. Although, have we ever seen one who runs like Lamar Jackson? Not since...
Just him and Vic.
Vic, Randall Cunningham, too, I think.
Yeah, Randall Cunningham.
Yeah, people, you could say running quarterback, Lamar Jackson, even RG3. Well, RG3 was faster than I am.
He didn't run it as much.
He did. No. You're right. But RG3, when he ran, nobody could catch him. But there's certain, there's an athletic quality to not getting hurt. Like Lamar does not take, he does take hits, but he doesn't take big hits. We talk about Russell Wilson has incredible athleticism and he kind of moves his shoulder. I think Lamar might be okay. I don't know if he's a good quarterback, but I know that he might not get hurt.
I think he ran for 6 yards in the opening game. And
yeah.
If he goes with the style of Russell Wilson and says, I'm going to run when necessary and keep you where you can't spy on me with a linebacker, where for the first 3 quarters, I may not run at all, or I may run 7 yards for when I need 6. But in the fourth quarter, all bets are off.
Yeah.
In a game when, that's why I think, because if you look at the stats, Russell Wilson, he's the best as a runner in the fourth quarter because it's a necessity.
You can't, there's nothing more annoying than you're rooting for the team against Russell Wilson in the fourth quarter, and it's 3rd and 10, and he drops back. It's like,
He always runs for 10 and a half yards.
Yeah, 10 and a half yards, it gets out of bounds. If Lamar Jackson could do that, he could last a long time.
Because once in a while, he'll cut it upfield, like maybe a couple times a year, and you're like, there he goes.
But you picture him in your mind. It's hard to get a big hit on him. You can get a big hit on Cam. We've seen that a million times. You can get a big hit on Carson Wentz. You can't get a big hit on Russell Wilson. Now, I don't know where Lamar Jackson falls, but Kyler Murray, you can't hit that guy at all. You're not going to be able to blow him up. He's too small.
That's the Leisureman Podcast for a Wednesday. We may even do a bonus Friday podcast to preview the college and pro football weekend because we didn't really get to the games.
Oh, you're right.
If you have it in you.
Yeah, I like games.
By the way, it looks like you're wearing a onesie with that blue shirt and blue shorts. It looks like a romper.
Oh, man, remember when rompers were a big thing 2 years ago? I'll take that as a compliment.
That's it. We're done.